Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Flies one into right. This one will drop. Red Sox are on top. Two runs score. It's 4-2.
Red Sox slugger J.D. Martinez put Boston ahead for good last night with that hit in Game 2 of the World Series against the L.A. Dodgers. L.A. will need a very big shovel to dig themselves out of the hole they now find themselves in. Boston is up 2-0, and Game 3 of the best-of-seven series is tomorrow in Los Angeles. Mike Pesca is here now, sports analyst. He hosts the daily podcast The Gist at Slate.com. He joins us now. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
And how would you characterize the World Series after two games? Is Boston as strong as they look?
They seem to be. They have been dominating every aspect of the game against the Dodgers team. That's good. That's really good, though they might not have looked it. Maybe the Red Sox MVP, and it's hard to pick one at this point, is their manager. Alex Cora has made all the right choices in contrast to Dave Roberts of the Dodgers. And maybe in the postseason we get on the managers too much. But, man, everything, every move, every pitcher he brought in has worked. Credit to them also. And the Red Sox right now, just statistically, with a 2-0 lead, I think around 85% of teams with a 2-0 lead in the World Series go on to win the series. But they have looked so good and so sharp, the Dodgers have to be very worried.
And you never know after what happened with the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were down, 3-0 and then came back and won the NBA Finals last year.
Yes, but the fact that we can cite the one or two instances where this happened, you know, it was the Yankees had that 3-0 lead against the Red Sox in the playoffs famously, but that was the only time it has ever happened in baseball history. And I would say this, if the Dodgers don't sweep, don't literally win all their games in L.A., I can't see much of a chance for them to come back to the cold and for them unfriendly confines of Fenway and win it in Boston. Can't see that happening.
Well, let's talk about that because I'm here just a few blocks away from Fenway Park. It has been cold. It's been rainy. They're about to go to 70-degree Los Angeles. Does that make a big difference for the Dodgers?
Are you basking in the glow of the Citgo lights? Is that
I think it does. That warms us up very.
Yeah, and the reason that I say it does, and home field per se doesn't have much of an effect in baseball as opposed to other sports, but the Dodgers themselves complained about it. Ryan Madsen, the Dodgers pitcher, said that the cold was preventing him from getting a good grip on the ball, and he used an adjective I hadn't heard in this context. He said, quote, "I didn't feel as gummy as usual when it's 75, 80 degrees. Yes, the cold of Boston getting in the way of Ryan Madsen's gumminess.
Right. Mike, while we have you, I want to ask you about another big story in sports right now. It's in basketball. A top prospect named Darius Bazley is skipping college for a $1 million internship at New Balance. What's going on there?
Two things. One, if he's getting $1 million, it's not an internship. I just wanted to put that out there. But shoe companies realize that the very elite players, not everyone, but the very elite players, some of these guys have, these high school kids have 1 million followers on Instagram. They're very valuable as endorsers. So the NCAA gets in the way of that. And the NCAA says, if you go to college, you can't take any money from an advertiser. But Bazley said, well, why am I spending my time in college? Why would I? He had committed or at least talked about going to Syracuse. He pulled out, got the $1 million for just endorsing the shoe, and his pro chances stay intact. He has to do with the reason he has a year to kill is because of NBA rules that say you can't come right out of high school. So I think, if anything, this is a good deal for the player himself, and it's another indictment of the flaw of the system that requires essentially indentured servitude, and the NCAA thinks they can continue to get something for nothing, and I think those days are numbered.
Well, I will just say, as the brother of a college athlete, my brother was a tennis player in college, on the
pro... How much was his internship worth?
He didn't get one, but he was sort of on the pro track and then didn't go pro, and then his college education actually really came in handy, and now he's gone into academia. I mean, there is an advantage of some of these people going to college. I guess maybe they decide, there's absolutely no way I'm not going to make millions of dollars in the NBA.
Right. If the 800th best player decided to do that based on a $25,000 internship with, I don't know, K-Swiss, are they still around? I would say it's a bad choice. But if the number one or two prospect in the country who is guaranteed to make millions of dollars makes that choice, it's different. And tennis is a good example because there are top tennis players who all the time decide not to go to college. In fact, going to college in a couple sports, tennis, primary among them, will probably hinder your development. So, you know, if when your brother was a senior in high school, he was good enough to, which is to say 18 years old, and someone who should be ranked at that age, you know, in the top 50 in the world, he shouldn't have gone to college then. But it's good that he got the college scholarship if he was a, you know, very good but not great or elite or possibly professional tennis player.
He'd still beat me like crazy, even though he did not go pro. Mike Pesca here, now sports analyst, also editor of the book Upon Further Review, The Greatest What Ifs in Sports History. Thank you.
You're welcome.